Coast to coast on the World Wide Web, this is Trot Radio on standardbredcanada.ca. I'm Norm Borg, and my guest today is Jason Settlemore, the CEO and General Manager of Meadowlands Racing and Entertainment. He's just gone through one hectic week in the life of a racetrack GM. Jason, welcome to Trot Radio.
Well, thanks, Norm. I appreciate you having me on. As always, you do a great job.
Thank you. You've had 2 7-horse eliminations last week for the Meadowlands Pace. That's 14 horses. This Saturday, you've split the Stanley Dancer into 6 and 7-horse fields. So the question is, strictly speaking, first as a racetrack general manager, what are your thoughts on races with divisions or eliminations with fields of this size?
Well, you know, it shows that when you have more horses in a race, the handle continues to go up exponentially. You know, as my position as the CEO and general manager of the Meadowlands Racetrack, the more horses I have in a race, the better the handle is, and that's what we have to draw our bottom line from at this point. You know, like the Meadowlands Pace, for example, if you had 11 through 13 entries, or I'm sorry, 13 entries, the top three earners would get a bye, and then if you had 12, two would get a bye, 11, one would get a bye, and then 10... they would go straight to the gate for the final. You know, so we have done some things. Take, for example, you know, like the Stanley Dancer and the Del Miller, that if there was 11 or 12, there'd be one dash. If there's more than 12, it splits like you're seeing there this weekend in the Stanley Dancer. But we've also, like with the Golden Girls, if there's 13 or more, then they, you know, it goes by highest seasonal money earners. And if there's 11 or 12, then the final would go a mile and an eighth, and with 10, just a mile. So we're trying different things here in East Rutherford to see what works best, not just only for the most important person, our customers, but also for the horsemen as well. But, yeah, I mean, it's clearly there's a lot of evidence that shows that when you have more horses on the track, that the handle starts to go up exponentially. You know, if you get 7 compared to 6 or 8 compared to 7, and then once you start getting up in the 9, 10, even 11 and 12, you know, those numbers on the handle start to go up exponentially. So the customer, that's what the customer wants. And, you know, we're a customer-driven business with gamblers. So, you know, certainly we have to listen to what they're saying. And so we're trying a lot of different things here to see what works best for just, you know, obviously for the customer and the horseman. But we need to be listening to our customers.
Let's shift over to Monday of this past week. You were part of an industry summit that was primarily focused on two issues, declining horse population and ownership. Now, your 2014 Hambletonian Maturity featured a 14-horse field. This year, a 6-horse field. Do you think the size of the field that went to the gate last year had any impact on the size of this Saturday's Maturity with only 6 horses? In so much as the owners and connections didn't want to see their horses starting from the second tier.
No, I don't think that's the case. I just think that you have, you know, this year you have horses, you know, a horse like J.L. Cruz that's been completely dominating, you know, and then you've had, you know, Shake It Carry and Father Patrick. So I think that, you know, those horses have overshadowed the other horses, and I think that that's the case for the lack of entries there in the Maturity Final, the Hambletonian Maturity Final. You know, so that's my opinion. But I think a horse like J.L. Cruz that's been completely dominant, you know, scares people away, and I think that that's probably the reason why we're seeing a short field.
So in a stakes race, speaking as a CEO and GM, should all stakes horses be guaranteed to have their nose in the starting gate, yes or no, and why or why not?
You know, we've changed our conditions for all of our early closers that 6th through last, everybody gets money. And if there's more than 10, they go a mile and an eighth. You know, so I think the added distance helps there. My opinion as the CEO and general manager of the racetrack is that, you know, we need to have as many horses out there on the track as possible to spur handle. And that's who we need to be listening to, are our customers, which are the gamblers. And again, my opinion is that the more horses on the track, the handle goes up. But we've done something there in those cases where we're paying sixth through last, everybody gets money. And on those types of fields, where not everybody's nose is on the gate, then we go the added eighth of a mile in order to try to get those horses more involved.
Yeah.
I don't think it takes much to look across overseas and look at Sweden and France and those places that clearly show, they have horses in the second tier and handle, like I said, is clearly, is clearly when there's more horses on the track, the handle goes up. So that's my opinion. We have to be listening to the customers, and they, the customers have resoundingly told us time and time again, more horses on the track, more handle.
From the betting side, the horse player or customer was not the major focus of Monday's summit. That's just by design. It's not to be dismissive. You're an owner, a racetrack GM. The biggest issue facing harness racing, owners or customers?
Both. Truthfully, I want to point out that, truthfully, if I didn't run for president of the USTA and use that platform to, make sure that people were well aware of the significant decreases that we were seeing in USTA membership, the total number of starters, and the total number of mares that are being bred, I don't know that we'd even be having this discussion right now.
Mm-hmm.
To me, both owners and customers are ultra important, and I think that we need to, but if you look at it, I believe, and I was reading a Facebook exchange from earlier this morning, that most people that are owners in this business, such as myself and, Myron Bells of the world and those types of people, those people were fans of the sport at first, and now they're owners. So I believe that creating new fans for the sport, and once they get into the sport, they see how great of a sport it is, they fall in love with it. It's something that you can't get out of your blood once you fall in love with it. I think that those people, naturally, as long as we're doing our job, there are some of those that will become owners of racehorses. And I think we have to do a better job as an industry getting new fans here, accommodating our current customer, obviously, and making sure that they're happy and well taken care of, and then getting new fans here to the track. And I think that fans eventually turn into either gamblers and or owners of racehorses. And I think that we need to make sure that we're creating interest in harness racing, developing an international fan base. We need to be able to lead in technology and gaming advances that are out there, increase the handle at our tracks, and create a unified, integrity-driven product.
Is there any talk that you're aware of for a similar summit focused on horse players?
I know that there is another summit that is being planned in September. I know that I had asked for these summits to begin last year at the USTA Board of Directors meetings, or earlier this year, I should say, back in March. With listening and seeing the social media that has been out there, I believe that we should be getting some gamblers in the room. We should be getting some of the younger horsemen and horsewomen in the room to give us their ideas and to listen to what they have to say, and how we can do better. One of the great things that I always hang my hat on here and my other facilities, anybody sends me an email or anybody calls me, I return every single one of those emails and every one of those phone calls, because I believe that customer service is important. And, so I think that, heading into this next summit, I'm supposed to have dinner with Mike Tanner the week of the Hambletonian, and I plan to ask Mike or tell Mike that, some of the outpour in social media is that, we need to get gamblers to this next summit. And also, I believe that we need to get you know, some of the younger horsemen and horsewomen in there, so they can speak their minds and see where we go from here, to make the product big, you know, better. And, you know, my biggest goal is, and one of the things that I'm trying to get to accomplish is, you know, we've had, you know, I think it's been $5 or $6 billion since Lots at Racetracks came around. And I think we're only kidding ourselves that if we don't use some of that money to market mm-hmm. our sport, you know, I think we're just going to continue to chase our tails. And we need to be marketing, getting new customers, making sure our customer base that we currently have is well taken care of, and then, you know, getting new ones in here, creating new fans who ultimately turn into gamblers and owners of horses. So.
Speaking of marketing, of course, you're hosting the Pace this weekend, Saturday night. There was a photo circulating on social media. It was an ad for the Pace, and it was front and center at Times Square in New York City this week.
Yep.
Now, it doesn't hurt that the ad isn't too hard on the eyes either, but that's another thing. What went into that, and what was the response like?
Well, Michelle Crawford, we actually have a similar sign at the Meadowlands that is down in the financial district, and I'm looking at a picture of it right now, where we have a digital sign in the financial district, as I just explained. But on this case, Michelle Crawford came to us and said that she wanted to put something in Times Square regarding the Meadowlands, the Crawfords Farm, Meadowlands Pace. And so this is what they've done. And so it's pretty cool. Not only do we just have one in New York City digital, you know, digital billboard that has the Meadowlands on it, but we also have this one as well. So it's pretty cool to have exposure down there among the millions of people in New York City. So, you know, letting them know that harness racing is out there. So, you know, like I said, we have one in the financial district, and that's how that one came about with Michelle Crawford with the Crawford's Meadowlands Pace.
Same kind of exposure plan for the Hambo now that it's turning 90 this year?
Absolutely, though, you know, the one in the financial district that we have used for the last couple of months will certainly highlight the Hambletonian and its rich history that it has here. So we're looking forward to that as well.
A couple of quick questions to wrap it up here. Sure. Who's your Pace 15 pick?
You know, George Teague is such a good person, and, you know, he had a lot of rough years there. So, you know, I guess I'm kind of rooting, if you will, for Wiglet Jiglet. You know, I had a nice conversation with George last week in the winner's circle, and he's always stayed upbeat and does the right thing, says the right things. And then I had a conversation, too, with him about Montrell. And, you know, and one of the things that's always flattering is, and you like to hear a father say it, and you hope you can always say the same thing about your kids, is that he said he thought that Montrell was a good driver and even a better person. So I guess that's kind of, you know, Montrell being the youngest driver in there, and George and the rough years that he's had, probably going to be the one that I'm rooting for tomorrow night here at the Meadowlands and the Crawfords Meadowlands Pace. I don't want to forget the Crawfords.
Absolutely not.
So much for the business, not just with us at the Meadowlands, Tioga, and Vernon, but, you know, for the entire industry. And like I said, you know, George and Montrell, and I can't even imagine how George would feel winning the Meadowlands Pace and saying that his son drove the horse. That would, you know, that's kind of got to be like at the pinnacle for them. Or if my son, one of my boys, went on to play Major League Baseball or pro football or something like that, you know, and it's a great story. And I wish everybody success and everything, but I think at the end of the day, that's who I'll be rooting for is Wiglet Jiglet.
Now, final question. In 2016, there was a colt sired by Western Ideal out of the mirror.
Right.
Out of the mirror. Dreams Are Great. It's going to be 3 years old. What are the odds that Settlemore will win the Meadowlands Pace next year?
I think he's got great odds of being castrated sometime soon. You know, I've been watching Settlemore, and you know, to have a horse named after you is flattering, especially with somebody like Jimmy Tactor training the horse. I got to call his first qualifier baby race here at the Meadowlands So that was pretty cool. And I put in that, you know, if they were going around the first turn and he was making his way to the front, that a good looking stallion, you know, so it was kind of fun to do that and to see him hang on to win the race. But he raced at Pocono the other night in one of the Pennsylvania stakes over there. And he was, I guess he made his way to the front and he stopped. And then immediately on Facebook, Perry Soderberg put out a message to me on Facebook that said that if he wasn't sick or something like that, that he may be he may have to protect his family jewels.
Jason, great job as always. Thanks for being with us on Trout Radio.
Thank you, Norm. You guys do a great job. Keep up the good work, and hope to see you down here sometime soon.
Hope to. Thanks a lot.